Welcome to season two of Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources consultant in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keast LLP, providing human resources advice and counsel to my business clients. I also support people through individual one-on-one coaching in helping with career development. I hope you will enjoy our series where we talk with ordinary, extraordinary people. We get to hear about interesting journeys. We get to talk with people about failures, successes, advice, and counsel to us as we develop our own careers. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with these people, and I hope you will enjoy listening to it. And now for some logistics. Please subscribe on YouTube, or if you're a listener, please follow me wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a chance, I hope you'll visit my website, career-resilience.com. Welcome. My guest today is Abiola Bala. Welcome to Career Resilience. We're so delighted to have an opportunity to chat with you today. So welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. And yes, that's probably Zeus you'll hear in the back.
Zeus. I like that name. So today we're going to talk about you and your resilience, and we're going to talk about your work related to diversity, equity, inclusion, which is also referred to as DEI, so that we'll shorten it probably to DEI as we chat. Abiola, let's start with where you're located. Where are you?
I am currently located in the beautiful Twin Island Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. So I'm actually on the island of Trinidad. So it's
okay. And is this where you were born and raised?
Yes, I grew up here. I was born and bred here. I left when I was 17, and I spent a lot of time outside of my home country, but it's always home.
It's always home. So what's the culture like?
Oh, very unique is one word that comes to mind when I think about culture. We are very multicultural society here in Trinidad, and we celebrate everything and everyone. We just had carnival over the last couple of days, and that's one of the, you know, most joyous times of year where everyone just kind of comes together and just, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a little different, you know, right now, but it's still that time where you feel it in the air, you feel it in the vibrations of the country, you know. Yeah. Music is a big part of our culture as well, and during this time a lot of our local music, calypso, was born here, soca music was born here, and also the steel pan, or some people say steel drum, was born here in Trinidad.
So you chatted a little bit about the culture. What's an interesting fact about you as a citizen of Trinidad and Tobago?
That's a really interesting question. And I think it's always something difficult for me to answer because, yes, I am a citizen of Trinidad. This is where I was born. It is my, as you would say, passport country, but the majority of my adult life, I've lived outside of Trinidad. So I've lived in the US for a long time. I've lived in Japan for over 10 years. I've lived in Belize. So all of those places are a part of me.
Yes.
And make up who I am as a person. So I think that's the most interesting thing about me as a citizen, because I'm not just a citizen. Like, yeah, technically, yes, I'm a citizen of Trinidad, but I'm a citizen of the world.
That's right. You're an amalgam. Yeah. So I have to ask you, what was it like to live in Japan for 10 years?
It was interesting. It was definitely a big part of my life happened in Japan. Like, I grew up in Japan.
Yes.
Right? I became like an independent adult in Japan. I found my career in Japan. And I think Japan would always hold a special place in my heart because just so much of it, so many of the mannerisms, the language, the culture has, you know, has become a part of who I am today.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet it was interesting. What made you decide to live in the States and live in Japan? And I think you said Belize as well. What made you decide to make those moves?
I mean, so I grew up in a family that has always traveled. Mm. We've been privileged enough to always travel. My grandparents were living in the U.S. And, you know, ever since I was, I think, 5 years old, we would visit them every summer. So I would always travel to New York and Baltimore to see my grandparents almost every summer before they passed away. And, you know, I decided at a young age that, you know, I wanted to go to college in New York because New York had become a second home for me. Mm-hmm. So I went to college in New York, and then I met so many different people while I, you know, lived there, being in college, you know, exploring the city, living in Brooklyn. And I wanted to travel more. And then I heard about, you know, a program that will take me to Japan. And I was like, apply. And I did it. I got through. And yeah, then I ended up staying for 10 years. And throughout that time, I kind of came to realize that who I am as a person is a person that wants to explore and learn and immerse herself into different places and find kind of that space where, like, not just one space, but different spaces where I can belong, because there's so many different parts of me, right?
Yeah.
So I think with every move that I've made, and I've actually, I think coming back here was my 7th country move, like physical country move. It has just kind of like opened my eyes to a whole way of thinking that I wouldn't have had I just stayed here. I would be a different person.
You'd be a different person for sure.
Yeah.
What did you like the best about Japan? I mean, if you stay in a place for 10 years, you must have some affiliation with it. So what did you like the best about it? What worked best for you in that country?
Does Tokyo Disney count? I love me some Disney. But no, I think on a more serious note, I would have to say that Japan became home. Like, it's really hard to pinpoint that one thing, because after you stay in somewhere for more than 3, 4, 5 years, it just becomes so normal to you. It becomes your home. And because it became my home, it also, the people who were my friends became my family as well. So I think it really wasn't just one thing. I mean, yes, I love the food, I love the culture, I love the language, I love all these different things, but it's really, I stayed that long because it became home, and also because my career was going where I wanted it to go while I was there. So that became a part of it too.
So let's switch over to education and career.
Yeah.
What education did you pursue?
So a couple of things. I did my bachelor's degree in communication arts with film and broadcasting. And I worked as a producer I worked as an editor, video editor, and as a television producer here in Trinidad for about a year. And then when I moved to Japan, I was teaching and I realized, okay, I kind of want to pursue this. So I did my master's degree, distance learning from the University of Leicester in the UK in applied linguistics and TESOL, which is teaching English to speakers of other languages. After a while, I realized that, you know, I started doing more, not just teaching, but also university counseling and working in that more international education field. And I wanted to get a little more practical knowledge in that area. So I actually, when I left Japan for California, and I went to Middlebury Institute of International Studies, where I studied, I did a second master's degree in international education management. So it was kind of what's my trajectory education-wise.
Yeah. So at some point in your career, you transitioned to a specialty within diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI? Or is this a side piece? Or
So DEI has always been something that has run through everything I've done. I just did not know what to call it until I was doing my master's in international education management. And I took that DEI class and I was like, oh, wait, this is what I've been basically doing and infusing into the curriculum that I've been developing for my classes and for my programs that I was running. So it has been something that over the past 16 plus years has been a part of who I am. But it was really great to actually put a name to it when I got to Middlebury Institute. And through that, I kind of continued along the lines of looking at it from the perspective of program design and assessment, and also from not only looking at it through higher ed, but also from social impact organizations and social enterprises.
What was sort of the trigger point that drove your interest in DEI so that you decided to move more into specializing?
So I would say that it really came from my experiences being a person living outside of her country. Mm-hmm. Being always the other in a room, right? The only one in a room, right? In rooms. And also feeling in some spaces that I wasn't being included, right? Or that I was, or there was just a lot of, you know, unconscious bias against me, or people would look at me and just see one thing and things like that. So a lot of it had to do with my experience. And I think I always, as a teacher, and I'll talk about that kind of part of my career, as a teacher, I always wanted knowing how I felt in some spaces, I always wanted my students and the participants in any programs I ran to feel like they were a part of it, that they were welcome in this space, and not just in the, you know, like we all say, oh, you're welcome here, but are you really, kind of thing? There's still that question mark about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want it to be that. I wanted them to actually feel that they were welcome in this space. So I put a lot of time into creating curriculum and designing programs that would ensure that they would have they would be able to show up as their whole selves, right? Every part of them was belonged there. And they were able to share as much and as little as they wanted in those spaces, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, it wasn't, I don't think for me it was just one thing. I think it was more a combination of experiences. And now as an entrepreneur with my business, I kind of came full circle back to diversity, equity, and inclusion, to DEI, because it wasn't how I started my business. It was something I kind of hid from in the beginning because, you know, I was like, is this what I should do?
Is that so what did you initially?
Be in that? Initially, I worked with teachers, helping them to, especially new teachers, helping them to create lesson plans for their students, especially those who were ESL teachers, English and second language teachers. And then I moved more into the curriculum and program design portion, where I did more, I created curriculum for online business owners. And as much as I love creating curriculum and doing it, it wasn't, something still didn't feel right.
Yeah.
You know, there was still something missing. And even from the beginning, like I would always talk about belonging and making sure your curriculum was inclusive and things like that. And then I'm like, I don't want to create curriculum. I want to help these business owners to create these inclusive programs.
Yeah.
On a whole.
Yeah.
You know, I need to focus in on that.
I wanted to ask you, Abiola, it doesn't occur to me as a white woman to think in terms of showing up as my whole self. I think maybe I show up as my whole self, but I'm not even sure that I completely understand what you mean when you say that. So can you describe a little bit about what you mean about showing up as your whole self?
Yeah. Showing up as your whole self, it comes back to thinking about the fact that you are not one identity. You are made up of unique identities. Those are, and they're all intersectional, meaning some of these identities are privileged and some may have been discriminated against. So if you think about yourself, and I'll use me as an example, I'm not just a woman of color, right? Yes, I'm a cisgender woman of color, but I'm also plus size. I'm also educated. I also speak three languages. I also am able-bodied. I'm also neurodivergent. I'm all of these things are part, make up who I am as a person. And when you enter into a space, whether it be the workplace, whether it be a membership community, a yoga group, anything, right? You're all of these parts of yourself are coming into that space.
All the components. That's what,
all the components of you are in there.
Right.
So, that's what I mean by showing up as your whole self, knowing and acknowledging that you're not just one thing. You're not just your race. You're not just your gender. You're not just your sexual orientation, right? Yeah. There's so much more. And, you know, even to add to that, your learning, how you learn is also a part of it. Things like that.
Okay. I guess I just don't think in those terms, but in the work that you do and the life that you've led, you've needed to think in those terms.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think, you know, as you said, most people don't think in those terms. And that's one of the things that in my work, I help the business owners and founders that I work with to start thinking in those terms and to start seeing how can we put practices in place that can actually let people show all of their unique identities or feel brave enough to do so, right?
And how does that help the business in terms of, you know, it used to be, not so much anymore, thank goodness, it used to be you sort of left yourself at the door and you came in and you did the job and you were very much encouraged just to leave yourself at the door. But what, I don't think that's the case anymore, but what can businesses do that sort of take advantage of the, you know, components, all the many things that make up our wonderful selves?
So everything is specific to your business and your situation. One of the things that I always say first when, you know, prospective clients or anyone comes to me is that you need to remember that inclusion is not cookie cutter. Right? I'm not going to be able to give you a checklist that you can be like, check, 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 I'm inclusive. Whoop, whoop. No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen like that. One of the things about inclusion and working in this space is that it is an ongoing process that you have to be committed to, that it has to be a part of your values, mm-hmm. right? Is this what you really want your to be at the forefront of your business? Is this something that is a priority for you? Because if it's not a priority, you're gonna do the bare minimum and be like, okay, yay, we have gender neutral bathrooms. We ask people to use pronouns on the Zoom. We say, hey, we put out a statement. Okay, we're done. But no, you're not. How actually those things are really just signals to say that, hey, we have some inclusive things in here. But what you're trying to do are have practices. And the practices come from the training, the processes, the policies that you're actively introducing and upholding. You're taking action on these things in your group, right? And this is the part that really kind of gets a lot of people overwhelmed, a lot of business, especially, you know, entrepreneurs, right? You're solopreneurs, you're just you. And so these are the people I usually work with. And it's like, how am I going to be able to do all these things, right? And I always, it's not about being able to do everything. It's about being able to, I always say progress over perfection, right? So able to take one step at a time and be able to break it down into small steps that you can, keyword, commit to doing.
Yeah. So right? One of the questions I was going to ask you was, what is an inclusive signal versus an inclusive practice? And I think that's what you're talking about, because that really jumped out to me. So an inclusive signal might be saying it's important to reflect the communities we serve. But then the much harder thing is the practice that says we're reflecting the communities we serve.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's so challenging.
Mm-hmm. And it is. And, you know, I think that's why so many people get overwhelmed, because one of the things, you know, I hear a lot is, I want to do something, but I don't know if it's the right thing, or I don't know if I should, or am I this person to speak on this? Am I like, what should I say something, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people have questions, and they are valid questions. And that's what I work to help you kind of own mm-hmm. and break down. And we try to find the way forward from those questions. What is the first small step you're going to take?
You know, one of the things that I said at one point was, you know, this is so embarrassing, actually, is if we could just all be kind to each other and just, you know, recognize each other's strengths, and then we just all go forward together. And that evidently is extremely naive on my part. And I've mentioned it a couple of times because I find it embarrassing that I'm that naive. Do you find that naive as well?
I wouldn't say naive. I think it's just it kind of comes from, you know, the saying, why can't everyone just get along?
Exactly.
Right? It comes from that feeling, right?
Yes.
And I think even right now, where we are in the world, I think we're all probably in our heads, and we're like, oh, can't everyone just get along for like 2 seconds, please? Yeah. Like it's human nature to think like that, right? Just like it's human nature to want to belong. Right. I think it's a part of that. But I think what it is knowing that's how you're thinking. And if you know that, okay, this is how I'm thinking, but this how I'm thinking right now isn't helping. So what do I need to shift in order to be able to do something that will help?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that would be a really interesting process to go through in thinking about what do we need to shift so that it goes from being a signal to a practice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. Okay. So I wanted to ask you, in terms of your business, what is your business model? How you're a coach. And so just tell me a little bit about you as a so you're a solopreneur, right?
Yes, I am a solopreneur. Fern Education Studios is all me. with the help of my sister sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's basically all me. So yeah, title-wise, I will consider myself an inclusion trainer. So what I do right now, what we do right now is we run workshops and trainings to help guide online business owners and founders through that process of building inclusive practices into their programs. So really, and also helping them to take action.
So in terms of your business and helping companies and small businesses take from signal to practice. Really like that because I can get my head around that. Because if they're signaling, that shows an interest. And if they talk to you, then they want to figure out how to do this as a practice. Do you have clients from various countries?
Yeah. So currently, I have worked with clients from various countries. The majority are from the US, but I have worked with clients from other countries too, and I'm hoping to work with more from other countries too, because I think it's, you know, for me, I come at this with the unique perspective of someone who has lived internationally for so long that I think I definitely bring a different viewpoint, whereas so many others, it can be very US centric or it can be very UK centric, right? But my work is really steeped in that idea of intersectionality and in that idea of it being thinking about people in your programs who are international as well, right? That's a big part of who someone is.
Yeah.
And they're coming into a program. So yeah.
Yeah. And what are the unexpected challenges you have found in being a solopreneur?
A lot. When I first started, I didn't realize how important, and I would say this, a good therapist is for an entrepreneur.
Yeah. It's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think that when you're a solopreneur, you're everything.
Yes.
You're every job.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's been a learning curve. I've spent so many years, you know, studying to be good at what I do. Like, I'm good at designing programs and curriculum. I can teach, you know, I'm good at what I do. Yep. And it was such a learning curve when I'm like, oh, right. Now I have to think about the finances. I have to think about budgeting. I've done that for organizations, but not in a way that it was all on me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But now it's all on me. And also the decisions are all on me.
I have three questions that I'd like to ask you.
Yeah.
And the first has been, what was the best career advice you received?
Yeah. So I thought about this and I've received like so much advice over the years, like for the different iterations, right,
of my career. Yes.
You know, but thinking about like this season of my career as an entrepreneur, there are two pieces of advice that I've gotten that have really helped me to like move forward. And one was from my business coach. Her name is Brooke Monahan. And she encourages you to break the rules of entrepreneurship. So she always says, you don't have to do things the way everyone else is doing it. You can do it your way. You can break out of that, you know, entrepreneur box that you're in. You can experiment. And there's no one right way to do things. And that always sticks with me because that's how I want to do things. I'm a rebel at heart, right? I want to break out the box and do things my way. I realize trying to do things just like everyone else doesn't work for me. I need to do it my way. So that's one. And the other is actually a friend and colleague of mine. She is a brilliant strategy consultant and her name is Monisha Bajaj. And she always said that, she says that in it, the order, I'm trying to get this right, the order that you do things in matter over the time it takes you to do them. So basically what she's saying is to stop trying to do everything all at once, mm-hmm. or skipping around, but take it one step at a time and slow it down if you need to. And that has really helped because in the beginning, I think I wanted to do all the things.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, I need to do this. But she's like, no, let's take a step back. There's an order to do these things, mm-hmm. right? And it doesn't matter the time it takes. Do it in order and you will see the progress. And I have. So
that's nice. Yeah. So I feel that in the first example, it's almost like you were given the freedom to just be yourself. And it was kind of nice to hear that from a coach.
That freedom to experiment is a big deal, you know, yeah. And it's okay.
It's okay. And I think that sort of brings us to full circle to the whole self, you know, being accepted as the whole self and accepting ourselves too.
Exactly. Exactly.
And your second piece of advice, I like that because it's accomplishments. You get wins along the way. And that's just so important. I think it's really important too obviously for all of us when we care about our work, but it's really important when you're sort of the everything.
Yeah, it is.
You don't have someone that's going to say to you, that was a good job you did today, unless it's you saying that to you. And we all have to get better at that.
I know. Sometimes I forget to tell myself I did well today.
Oh, that's just so wrong. We have to remember.
Yeah, we do. I agree.
So the second question that I had for you is there a book that you've read that influenced you or your style or your thought processes or just any, what comes to mind for that question?
Yeah, so I also thought about this. And the book that I read this book a couple years ago. And it's called The Body is Not an Apology by Sonia Renee Taylor. In her book, she talks about like radical self-love, demanding that we see ourselves not as just one thing, but as complex. We see the intersections in ourselves and in others, mm-hmm. and we create space for those intersections in ourselves and in others. So it's also a big part of the work I do now. I didn't know it then that it would be, but it's also a big part of the work I do now. And I remember reading that book and just like every like 5 seconds, like posting on my stories and Instagram, telling people, you have to read this book because I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Sounds excellent. Sounds like something we'd all benefit from, actually.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And third, and I'm really interested to hear what you have to say to this one, Abiola. What advice would you give your younger self?
So I would actually tell my younger self something that I've actually mentioned before and that I tell my clients all the time, and that is progress over perfection. I'm saying that because a lot of the times growing up, what I focused on was getting that accolade, getting that degree, getting, you know, perfect 4.0, making the honor roll, making, you know, graduating with distinction. And I did all those things. But what I missed out on was that messy middle that got me there, how I progressed through that. Like, I forgot about the things that I overcame, what made me stronger in order to get those things. And I think I just wanted to be able to show that finished product, right? These are the things I've done. Don't worry about how I did it. Right? And it's not, now I know that there is actually beauty in that messy middle and in the progress that you make for your, that you go through, you know, that as you kind of hit those different milestones in your life. And if you're not really focused on that, but only that perfect score, you miss half of it.
So, right? So when here we are talking to your younger self, we're talking to Abiola, and and you're saying to her, you know what? I'm just so proud of you for what you accomplished in terms of certainly education and the bravery it took to, you know, wander the globe and live in different places. So that's, I'm so proud of you part. And the other part is maybe embrace a little bit of that messiness.
Yeah, embrace it. Like, yes, it was hard, but also don't hide it. Mm. Don't hide from it. And also don't hide it from others.
Yeah.
Because I think younger Abby did a lot of that. And now, you know, this whole entrepreneurship thing is, you know, saying, woo-hoo, right here.
Yeah.
The messy middles are coming back.
Messy
middles.
Let's
deal with them now. And that's okay, because I think that's a good thing. Because now I feel like I am becoming more present in the day-to-day, mm-hmm. in the experiences that I'm having.
Are you still a perfectionist?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in some ways, yes. I mean, I'm a work in progress, Jan. Work in progress. Right? But in some ways, I can be, but I think I'm not a perfectionist to the point where I break down if it's not perfect.
Yeah. The advantage of living and evolving.
Yes, I think it's happened before, but I think I'm growing.
Yeah. That's great. I'm glad. Those are all the questions that I wanted to ask you. Is there anything that you wanted to add before we wrap up and say goodbye?
Just that this was such an amazing chat to have with you. Thank you so much. If you want to talk to me more, you can find me on Instagram. I'm there at Kern Education Studios.
All right. What's the name of your business again?
It's Fern Education Studios.
Okay. And to find you, it would be on Instagram. That's where you're housed. Okay.
Yes, I'm housed on Instagram.
To our viewers and listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation between Abby and I. It has been so interesting. And I love how talking to someone like Abby expands my mind. And that's what it's all about for all of us. So I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Please find me on YouTube or listen wherever you get your podcasts. Or take a look at my website, career-resilience.com. And until we meet again, thank you so much.
Thank you.